As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Accelerating your fandom, this is Flash TV Talk.
Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to revisiting the classic 90s series, The Flash. I'm Beau.
And I'm Bell.
Bell! Man, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I was extremely tired all day, and then I got on here and started reading up on the episode summary, and I got my second wind.
Oh, good, man. I'm glad to hear it. You get all, did you inject something to get yourself up and going? Get the, aggression going, get that energy up, go crazy.
Well, it's funny. I tried this morning and it didn't work. And then I remembered it has to be ionized.
And that's it. That's the key for everything.
Yeah. So if like I Hulk out and start breaking stuff and you hear smashing in the background, it's okay.
Man, I am so stoked to talk about this episode, man. You talk about hulking out, and I think there's a lot going on here. It's going to be interesting to kind of cast our minds back to episode 2 of season 1 from back in 1990. But man, I'm really, really thrilled to do it. Of course, if you've not found this series before, welcome. We've been going back through the classic 90s series. We've just started off going through the single season of the Earth 90 Flash as he is now connected to the CW-verse or the Arrowverse or what have you. And man, this has been a really, really solid launch. People have been responding really, really well. Of course, this series would not be made possible without the direct support of our patrons at patreon.com/TV Talk. And as we mentioned last week, we will be giving away a copy of the Earth 90s series box set slash digital slash box set. I think box set.
Two copies even.
Well, one copy we're going to be giving away this episode. So stay tuned to the end of the episode and find out if you are a patron, whether or not you're a winner. So we'll be announcing that. And hey, if you want to enter your name into the running to win that second box set of the 90s Flash series, head over to patreon.com/TV Talk, help support this show. And your name will be in for the next giveaway, but stay tuned to the end of the show and we will be giving one away then. Man, I also have to make mention to the man himself, Mr. John Wesley Shipp. Now, longtime listeners of Flash TV Talk know that we've had John Wesley Shipp on the show before, back when, obviously at that stage in the game, we weren't revisiting the classic series. We were talking to him about his role as Henry Allen, asking about Dawson's dad. It was really interesting, man. I was reflecting on this just the other day, but as you may recall, we had him on in like the days leading up to the birth of my second child. And I remember because we thought that she actually might be born that night. And I didn't want to tell, I didn't want to cancel the interview. And so once we got done, John was like, wait, why are you talking to me, man? You're about to be a dad. So anyway, it was just really funny. But great guy.
Oh,
always,
yeah.
Always a class act, and of course, a big big presence in the fan community as well. And gave us a nice little shout out on Twitter, which so if you're finding the show because of John's sharing it out, thank you and welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. We're glad to have you here.
Absolutely, man. Okay, are you ready to do this?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Let's jump into the rundown. Episode 2 of Season 1, Out of Control, directed by Mario Azzopardi and written by
Gail Morgan Hickman.
Belle, what happened to this episode?
While Barry and his colleague Julio Mendez investigate the murders of several homeless people whose bodies are being stolen from the crime scenes, Tina reconnects with an old friend, Dr. Carl Tanner, who has recently returned to Central City to retrieve Tina's late husband's research on genetic engineering. Barry and Tina learn that Tanner is using the vagrants in his illegal and lethal experiments to create mutations, and upon being confronted, Tanner injects himself with the unfinished serum, turning into a man monster that only the Flash manages to defeat.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, man, this is a classic, man, just a classic kind of sitcom-y, delicious episode that is mixed in with a bunch of like superhero antics. I'm really, really stoked to dive into this one, man.
Yeah, it's I honestly did not remember this one because I know I watched the first several episodes, when we first started this podcast, you know, as we were coming up on the first Trickster episode of the CW show, and for some reason I don't remember this one. So
I mean,
it was
like, look,
yeah,
this is like got all the classic, like, you know, I mean, just social dynamics, right? Like, oh, he was a friend of my husband's and they were always in competition for me, and it really was a coin toss whether or not I was going to marry my husband or this guy. So Carl's kind of the one that got away, and Barry's all like, oh, he thinks you can come in here and say science stuff. Well, I could say science stuff too. You know, like,
yeah, it's very tropey, very, very tropey.
And then on top of that is like, oh, the bad guy is the guy that you have a crush on. What's the convenience of that?
And she's like, of course not. He would never do anything like that. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I loved it, man. I think it's, you know, it's par for the course, I think, for a series of the time. And it, you know, if we're being totally honest, a lot of those same story elements still continue on several decades into the future. So I think that there's there's almost like a, what is it? Like almost a little bit of a nostalgia when you kind of see it play out in this former fashion. Now, what I love, man, is I was thinking through this episode is just how, you know, I wrote this down in my notes as I'm watching the show, and I'm thinking, man, this show was really ahead of its time. But as the episode went on, I realized that maybe it was also behind the times. Like it was in many ways, it was a decade ahead and a decade behind in that it found itself between these two eras of superhero television. If you think back to, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, right? That's when you had the Hulk series came out, and, you know, you even had him like fighting Thor in there. There was a time, right?
Yeah, you know, and every time anybody mentions the 70s Hulk show, I just remember that, you know, sad walking away music from the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, I mean, wait, what year was that actually? Like Hulk series.
I want to make sure. Starring Lou Ferrigno, who also had a cameo in the Incredible Hulk, the version of it that was in the MCU, which is the Incredible Hulk. That's the title. Because Ang Lee's was just Hulk.
That's right. Okay, so the Incredible Hulk, right? So that was 1977 through 1982. So essentially 10 years before this. Far more successful, obviously, than The Flash, which is kind of ridiculous. This is look, I don't want to bash the Hulk. I know that there's great fans of that show, but I mean, just you look at that show and you look at this show, and I mean, like,
but look at any show. I mean, it was from around this. I mean, because you can't compare the Hulk to the Flash, to the 90s Flash, right? You got to compare the Hulk to other shows like A-Team and MASH and like all the other stuff that was on TV around then.
Okay, fair enough. That's a fair point. But if you think about what that series was doing at the time, like he had an episode where he fought Thor at one point. And then you had, you know, Marvel was trying to make that terrible Captain America series as well. Like there was a time in which superhero television was trying, in some ways it found its footing, in some ways it very much didn't. And you kind of think about like if this series had come out then, when the iron was hot for, you know, superhero properties on TV, or at least looking for quality superhero properties on TV, you kind of think that like maybe this wouldn't have had one season. Like this would have actually done incredibly, incredibly well. In fact, I almost get the sense that this episode tries to kind of set up a situation where it's like the Hulk versus the Flash, right? I mean, I know we're talking about two different universes, but is not our boy here, Carl, kind of like a stand-in for David Banner?
I mean, he's like if Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Banner kind of fused, where instead of like getting mad and turning into the Hulk, he injects himself and turns into the Hulk.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody's trying to get sued here. I'm just... That's exactly right. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah. that's the idea. I mean, you see this a lot. I mean, DC and Marvel have done this in comic books and other, you know, properties that they and other avenues, rather, that they've used their properties on, where they'll have kind of like, oh, this is what it would be like if, you know, Superman, you know, we don't have Superman fighting this. We have the Century fighting this. Oh, we don't have, you know, the Hulk fighting here. We have Solomon Grundy fighting here. But I mean, essentially, that's what they're doing. Is they're kind of setting up in your mind what it could be like if you could kind of imagine that other hero that you know and love that isn't currently here because we don't legally have access, but we're trying to tap into that those nostalgia vibes. We're trying to tap into the popularity that's there. This was, I think it's safe to say, this was the Flash versus the Hulk.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
TV-wise, anyway.
I mean,
like
yeah.
The TV version of the Hulk, yeah.
It's a comic book. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is not a comic book. There was a Hulk TV show. This is also a TV show. So
that's the thing. The Hulk was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, that is literally the Hulk.
I mean, I guess so. Yeah.
I think Stan Lee has even admitted that that's the case.
So
he was fine ripping off stuff. Like, he'll tell you, "Wow, I was just reading a book and it said Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So I thought, what if he was a superhero?
Excelsior." Yeah.
No, I mean, that is 100% the inspiration there.
Yeah. But he didn't turn green. That was one thing. I was hoping that he would turn green.
No. Again, nobody's trying to get sued.
or like, not I don't know. Man. I don't know. Like. Brown, or you know, what color is purple? If he turned purple and he had green clothes on all the time, that would have been great.
Okay, gotta invert the color scheme. I mean, there's something there. There might be something there for sure. But no, man, I think they played it safe the way they did it. And like you said, you definitely, I think probably the stronger obvious vibes are the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But if you kind of cast your mind back to, you know, what this series was and kind of where it fell into, you know, trying to be the new Hulk for a new generation. It would make sense that early on that's something that you would want to see, or at least try to, you know, create in the mind's eye of the viewers that are out there. Now, I love this, man. In this episode, of course, we do see that Carl, he's got a strong hatred for the homeless. He's out conducting experiments on them. You see him, he's got rats, he's got dogs, and he's got the homeless folks that he basically sees in kind of a similar light. And the advocate, man, is a priest who's out here trying to represent the homeless in his parish. And I love the dynamics between the priest and Barry's boss, and Barry and Barry's boss is like, "Hey, man, I understand. I'm a church going man myself." And then Barry slams him with, "You haven't been to church since you were baptized, Christian Burn." <Yeah. laughs> I thought that was hilarious.
Hit him with that flaming sword on that one.
Right on that one. I wrote that one down, man. I was like, I don't know how or when. But I'm gonna use this. That's just too good. But anyway, I thought that was hilarious. So like I said, man, Carl, of course, he's got some issues, but he is the one that got away. What did you think about him kind of butting heads with Barry in this kind of love triangle that we see, knowing full well that Iris is still, you know, he's still with Iris.
Well, but they set that whole thing up though with him and Julio, where like, you know, she sends Barry the postcard and Julio grabs it and like burns it and whatnot. And he's like, you know, "Oh, get your mind off of that." So like they still have it there. And that's what's so interesting about this show, that, you know, I've gotten so used to Barry and Iris because, like, you know, there was the whole will they won't they in the CW Flash show for a while. But now it's just, you know, it's been firmly cemented that they are together just like they are in the comics in the CW show. And then with this show, you know, they had Iris in the first episode. They introduced her. She left. And Tina, like, okay, well, like, clearly they're pushing Tina as a love interest, but like, but what about Iris? But we haven't seen her, you know, and she sends this postcard. And so it's like, you know, what's going on here? And so it's
he burned up the postcard, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Julio
and then,
burned
and
it.
Then you, Did you see what he did after he burned up the postcard?
No. Well, Julio, you didn't notice? Julio or Barry?
Yeah, Julio.
What did he do?
He leaned back on the Bunsen burner. I was worried for him. Oh. like he lit it on fire and he puts it away and then he kind of crosses his hands. He leans back behind. And I'm like, dude, it's still on. I was a little concerned there that Julio was about to go up.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd have been funny. But yeah, you know, so it's, I don't, is this a love triangle or is this a love square or a love rectangle or a love rhombus?
A hexagon? What if it was a love octagon? Dodecahedron. It's a love dodecahedron.
So there's 20 people involved?
I think so. I think if you consider, I mean, like, I'm not going to list them off here, but I think we are all very much aware of the 20 folks involved in this relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But seriously, though, you got Barry and Iris, Barry and Tina, Tina and Barry, Tina and Carl. At least in this episode, that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
But Carl kind of like blew his chances right there at the beginning by being all like really pushy and.
He blew his chances with Barry.
Yeah, he was not nice to Barry at the beginning. He called him out for like saying non-sciencey stuff and for using the lawyer on the billboard as like, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. The shippers were lined up and then it just, it's like, nah, this ain't happening.
No, but like Carl yeah. with Tina, because, you know, he tries to
Tina
kiss.
Tina was not shutting him down, man. What are you talking about?
When he walked her home and he kissed her out in front and she's like, whoa, dude, like, what's up?
At that point, yes. No, but you're saying like straight from the jump that he didn't have a chance.
No, not straight from the jump. Not straight from the jump.
Okay.
But like, yeah, he moved way too quick on, you know, a widower. Who,
but the way it was set up, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to, all right, this is devil's advocate. I am not saying that Carl was in the right here, but I am saying that, like, you know, they did lay out the background story of that, you know, Carl was competing with her husband and that, you know, you kind of got the sense that he's the one that got away. And it's like, well, you know, if the husband's out of the picture and Carl comes back, you know, I mean, like,
yeah, I mean, I see what they're trying to do.
They have a history. He's not like a new guy out of nowhere.
Right. No, and I see what they're trying to do. It's just, but like, how many years had it been that he had been gone?
Since you've been gone, I've been drinking gin before recording a podcast. Wait, what?
Yeah, that long. He's been gone that long. And yes. I don't know. It just came off as kind of, it's kind of weird for him to just like pop right back up into her life after she was widowed and like think that he had a chance. Although, yes, she was being very kind to him because they did have this connection. But like, I didn't really feel like, aside from, you know, their past connection and the friendship and whatever that she held when he came back, that she was kind of honoring that and not like being like, yeah, you know, this guy, blah, blah, blah. And then like when Barry kind of pressed into it, that's when she sort of like got mad at him for being jealous of this dude that she doesn't really have any sort of connection with now anymore, you know?
Which really isn't fair. Doesn't she realize she's in a 90s sitcom? Like, this is what happens. Like, yeah. You think she'd be aware.
I know.
No, that's fair. Yeah. No, you're right. But I think that she was, if Carl hadn't played it so strong so fast, then he probably, you know, if he'd played a little bit of a longer game, they might have rekindled something until she discovered that he was a disgusting human being in every way.
So at what point, I'm trying to remember the order of events, when he drugged her, was that before or after Barry accused him of wanting of being the bad guy? And she was like, you know what, maybe
it's gotta be after. Gotta be after. Like, that's the thing. That kind of reveal doesn't happen early on.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me. Like, if I was at dinner with somebody at my house and then the next thing I know I wake up on the couch, I'm gonna be asking a lot of questions.
Well, man, this has happened multiple times. And as I recall, you're just like, oh, it must be Tuesday. Like, you know, and you got up and left. Like,
look, you know, one glass of wine, a bottle of whiskey, doesn't matter, you know.
When I'm disappointed that our crisis house party didn't get you blackout drunk like you had planned.
yeah.
It's probably for the best, all things considered. All right. No, you're right. Look, that's they clearly were very ill matched, and that's the case. Here's my question for you, though. I mean, like, you know, we are saying already we are behind the Tina Barry pairing, the Terry, we're Team Terry, right?
Team Terry, yeah.
Team Terry, we're all about that. Terry the tank engine. That we gotta find something. We still haven't figured out what is the, like, you know, if we're gonna ship Terry, there needs to be like a Terry troop.
Barry McGee?
Team Terry, I guess, is fine. No, I mean it could be the same name. I just need some sort of alliteration to go with
Talon?
It. And Team Terry doesn't seem fun enough.
Or Malin?
McAllen? I said McAllen. You didn't like McAllen.
No. Yeah, I don't know. Now, I like Terry. I'm a fan of Terry myself. I just think Terry works. Terry's great. Terry's the best.
No, I'm all about it. I'm riding the Terry train. It's good. It's all about it. But anyway, look, that's the thing. We're for that. But at the same time, Iris is still in the picture and is
is she though? She's being successful in France.
Barry should break it off with her, right? Like, what is like at this point, she was not as into it as he was, or at least she didn't want to kind of progress things, and she was only going to do it because he wanted to, because she wanted to kind of maintain the relationship. But now he's kind of starting to regress. Don't you think? I don't know. Like, doesn't he kind of owe it to her? I kind of feel like Barry is the bad guy here.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I feel like it's one of those situations where, like, they call each other and they're both going to be like, yeah, let's just call it quits.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that happens at some point. I know that you said that you've only watched 3 episodes of this series, right?
I don't remember exactly how many because I watched, I think, up to the Trickster episode.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, my hope is that Barry does the right thing. I like, that's the one thing that I kind of keep on thinking, like, come on, bud, you can do it. You know. You know what's up. Dogzilla, man. We got a chance to fight Dogzilla in this. Beautiful shadow puppet.
Yeah, like... They use that trope a lot where it's like, oh, it's the big scary shadow on the wall. But, like, you know, in this particular instance, it wasn't like a small dog that was just, you know, backlit and projected big. It was actually a giant big werewolf thing.
Right.
Which was pretty cool. I want to know what the heck he's injecting them with to make them, like, you know, humanoid or yeah.
No, it's ionized.
It's the ionization. It's got to be.
It's the ionization. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is. He's just ionizing it. I liked Dogzilla. I liked they were able to save it. It was interesting because, like, you know, when he started injecting the dog, I was like, not the puppy. There's an extra kind of evil, right? Like, obviously the guy's going out, he's attacking and essentially, like, killing homeless folks. And then he does it to a puppy. And it's like, you know, like, what does that say about human society where when the puppy gets involved, you're like, no, not the puppy. Like, he's just murdered people.
Yeah, it's like all the homeless people that he's killed. And then you're like, oh, no, the puppy, which survived, mind you. The dog did live. But, like, all the other homeless people who are dying, you know, you're no better than Dr. Carl Tanner.
The Dr. Carl Tanner. That's right. A bunch of Tanners.
Yeah.
He had that cage, man, that cage to trap Barry, which kind of, you know, I guess, was it sucking out the air or was it putting gas into it? That was one thing I wasn't sure
about. No, it's a big vacuum chamber.
Okay. So was that you? Do you think he had that specifically to trap the Flash or was he doing some sort of experiments with it?
No, I mean, that was in Star Labs. So I think that was some kind of just, you know, vacuum chamber in Star Labs they're using.
That just so happened to be there. It reminded me of in the Smallville episode Justice, which we watched a long, long time ago. No, man.
Of course it reminds you of Smallville.
Yeah, of course, man. Look, Lex actually traps Bart Allen in a similar, like a room, a glass cage that looks very, very similar to this, albeit a little bit larger, where it was pressurized. So the Flash had to be in constant motion. Otherwise, he would die. And so Bart was, like, literally, like, running around in circles and everything else and until Clark came in and saved him. So, yeah, no, I you know, I did not know if perhaps Smallville might have taken inspiration from this, but it just reminded me of that. That being said, I do think that, like, you know, lit up glass walls is kind of a common superhero trap cage scenario. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, they did it in Superman 2. And then they did it again in Superman 2 at the end, but he reversed the polarity of the trap.
Dun, dun, dun. He should have ionized it.
He should have.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have done something. Would have activated is what it would have done.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. There you go. All right. Another thing to note here, thinking about kind of some of the effects that we're dealing with. I mentioned this last week, but what are your thoughts about how we're seeing super speed? I mean, I guess it's kind of par for the course. You know, this is obviously pre-Matrix, so you don't have that bullet time kind of expectation I think that audiences have now. But, you know, we get a chance to see Barry doing the, you know, he runs in real fast and gets rid of the gun so fast you don't even see him. But then you also see him, like, pounding those moose bouches at the beginning of the at the episode at the party, going after those bruschettas.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there was a little bit of the slow-mo bullet time thing I feel when he threw the bottle of whatever it was, nitric acid or no, it was nitroglycerin or something like that.
Well, that wasn't bullet time, but I mean, like, yeah.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, bullet time was invented by the Wachowski brothers for The Matrix. Yes. But it was a similar kind of like slowed down sort of feel, but make you think that it's sped up. That was the intent they were going for, right? And it was a tiny little bit of that in that part of the episode. But yeah, most everything feels like it's just normal speed that they speed up, you know, run the film faster to make it look faster kind of stuff. And like you were saying, the invisible portions where they just blow an air cannon by somebody to indicate that he's run by.
It is interesting because when he is the Flash, there is a little bit of a blur effect, but nothing like, you know, crazy, which is to be expected, right? I mean, like, we're not watching this anticipating any kind of like big movie budget, or even if they even had a big movie budget, just the capabilities that, you know, actually it's kind of probably better that they went a little bit more low tech with how they displayed everything, because otherwise it would have been like a GIF of like lightning behind them, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It'd have been like rotoscoped, really weird looking lightning
stuff. Horrible, horrible special effects from the era. So I almost kind of feel like the low tech nature of it, the practical nature of it, I suppose, is probably a better way to say it.
Well, I will say this, mentioning lightning, I actually noticed this in this episode where there's a scene where he's running and he's got the gold on his belt. Mm-hmm. And the gold on his wrist and the gold on his ears, and the way they streak it and kind of smear it and blur it, it does kind of look like lightning trailing out behind him.
I think it's meant to be an homage. I don't think we're supposed to interpret that as like lightning in particular.
No, absolutely not. The intent was not to like, these are lightning. It's just how they streak it. But like in my mind, it kind of looks, you know, it looks kind of like a lightning-y kind of thing. I remember distinctly going like, oh, wow, that's kind of lightning-ish. Obviously, it's not what they're trying to do, but it sort of reminds me of it. When you have the red smear and the gold and, you know, the way they blur it and everything, it was kind of neat.
The other thing you got to remember, and this is kind of interesting as well, is that, like, you know, you think about the lightning, we kind of associate that mostly with, you know, the concept of the Speed Force. But the Speed Force was a much more, like, that didn't show up, like, canonically in canon until, like another decade or two after this show. So they're dealing with a very kind of classic Silver Age Barry Allen without the more cosmic nature of the Speed Force. In fact, I don't think, I'm sure Karen or somebody's going to jump on me for saying this if I'm wrong, but I don't believe at this stage in the game, the Flash was even traveling through time, right? In terms of his power set.
I mean, he wasn't traveling like in the pilot episode when they, you know, gauged his speed. I want to say he only got up to like 500 miles an hour, which granted is fast, but like it's nothing like, you know, the CW Flash Barry, you know, can go. I don't think they mess with time at all.
I mean, I could be wrong. It's very, very possible that I am, but I'm kind of thinking, let me think about this. All right. So. This is good. I'm doing a little education on the fly here. It looks like, in fact, that Barry accidentally travels back in time with Kid Flash during the Silver Age in 1959. So that would have been 10 years before this. So, all right. So there
you go. 1959?
1959.
Wouldn't that be Golden Age?
No, first of all, I don't think Kid Flash didn't exist in the Golden Age. Kid Flash was an introduction of the Silver Age. Okay. So. Yeah, now so he was traveling through time now. So that kind of gets me curious as to whether or not we'll actually see some time travel in this series. But I'm wondering if maybe not, because like I said, they are kind of keeping these situations a little bit more grounded. Yes, we had Dogzilla. Yes, we had, you know, the Hulk, essentially Marvel's take on the Hulk. But at the same time, you know, I mean, it's still fairly 90s tropey stuff. We're not dealing with any comic book names other than, you know, Barry and Iris.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I don't think we get the comic book names until a little later on. I mean, aside from like accessory characters, stuff like Linda Park has been mentioned. Obviously, you know, Iris has been mentioned.
Well, that's right.
You know,
but in terms of like the super, you know, super heroic or super villain, I'm really kind of, I guess, more than anything else talking about the super villains, because that's one thing that you see in these television series is that often, in fact, the Flash was kind of groundbreaking, because when their Freaks of the Week were actual, like, you know, characters from the show, our characters from the comics, talking about the CW, the more recent one. If you think about what Arrow was doing, if you think about what Smallville did, like, it was very rare that you actually got supervillains with kind of comic book connections outside of like maybe Lois and Clark, you know, having Lex Luthor or, you know, occasionally bringing in some characters of the comics. A lot of times it's just, here's a random situation or a random dude or, you know, made up for the show. And, Flash, I mean, man, I would love to be corrected if I'm wrong on this one, but I do think that the CW's Flash is one of the first comic book series to really like lean in so that almost every single week you're getting a villain with direct comic book ties. Now, it may be, you know, changed, modernized, gender bent, whatever the situation is, but it has direct ties to the comics. A lot of these folks, I'm looking up, you know, what their, you know, what their ties are to DC Comics, and I'm finding, well, they kind of originated here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like that's because of the success of Arrow and like, you know, Smallville in its later seasons started bringing in other characters from the Justice League and
in
stuff
the later
like that.
Seasons, but not, but even still then, not, I mean, yes, you're right. Smallville did in the later seasons, but I think they really wanted to make sure when they brought in a comic book character, they wanted to get like a big name behind it. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like it couldn't just be, you know, some model from Quebec. Like it actually had to be somebody who, you know, you would like, for example, for Brainiac, they brought in James Marsterson from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And that was a big casting get. But on top of that, he wasn't just a one and done character. He was also a season long villain.
Yeah.
You know, whereas with the Flash, you know, we've had big names, top tier villains show up for even just a single episode.
And then Barry murders
even, like,
them.
Yeah, well, he doesn't murder them. I mean,
he wrongfully imprisons them.
Yeah, he locks them in the basement. But that was pre-crisis Barry. We're dealing with post-crisis yeah. Barry. It's a different universe now. Even smaller time folks. Like you think about Rainbow Raider, right? Like we hadn't seen Rainbow Raider in like forever.
Yeah.
But that's a comic book character. Yes, he's kind of goofy.
He's totally goofy. In the comics, he rides a surfboard made out of a rainbow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing.
I'm still hoping the post-crisis version of him does.
Yes.
They need to bring it back.
Got to bring it back. Yeah, I think you're right there. I think, you know, they really started to, and maybe it was licensing. Maybe it was something they finally got the rights to just dive maybe. Deeply into the comics. Or maybe it was one of those things where they looked at, okay, all these previous shows have made up characters just for the show. We have this wealth of this giant rogues gallery that no one has the rights to. Why not just use them? Kind of thing. I don't know which one it was.
Okay, so the rights is kind of interesting. That may be a play. I was going to lean more on the idea that we're dealing now with, you know, content creators, you know, like directors, producers, writers who grew up on these kind of shows and always felt like, you know, felt this lacking nature of like, wait, why don't we have these big names? Like, why don't we have Superman going up against, you know, Brainiac going up against, I'm blank, Toyman, you know, like why isn't this happening? Why does we have to wait 5 weeks, half a season, an entire season before we actually see a villain from the comic books? And I think that if you look at the team behind the CW's Flash, they have a lot of direct inspirations. I mean, like this show in particular is an obvious direct inspiration for the modern series. You also have Smallville, you also have Lois and Clark, you also, you know, you've got these larger shows that have occurred that they grew up with. And so all the things that we felt as people, you know, kids growing up watching these shows and comic books and like, you know, saying like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if Batman and Superman were actually in a movie together? Well, now the people making the movies are like, yeah, they grew up saying that exact same thing. So that's what they want to see. You know, even the notion of Avengers, you know, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, pre-Iron Man seemed so far-fetched, like something you would just talk about in a comic book shop. But the reality is that the people who are making those shows, those movies, those properties, managing those properties, they grew up having those conversations in the comic book shop. And now, you know, those lessons learned are being applied because they know what people want, because that's what they wanted. And so I think, you know, in a series like this and many that came before, you had a lot of folks who probably watched this. And yes, it was cool to see the Flash beat up the bad guys and run through and save the day and everything else. But as you dive into the comics, you're like, ooh, but where's Zoom? You know, like where's Captain Cold? Where's Eobard Thawne? Where's the Trickster? Like where are these kind of bigger names? And you know what? We're only in episode 2. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some big names here in the near future. I got a Flash fact for you. You ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, so I gotta, man, we mentioned that throughout the course of the series, we're gonna start, you know, rather than seeing references to other things, we're going to see things that were referenced from this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they're like reverse references. We're seeing the thing that was referenced in the CW show.
Exactly. So this is very time travel, very, very on brand. We've got the villain actually here is, you know, Carl Tanner. Was actually referenced, or at least there was kind of an homage paid in Caitlin's mother from the CW's Flash. As you recall, man, her name was Carla Tannhauser.
Tannhauser.
And so Tannhauser, thank you. And so the name takes direct inspiration from Dr. Carl Tanner. Think about it. They're both geneticists. They're both working in kind of a similar scientific field. And they're both evil. So there's a little connection there from the new show to the old show, the Flash series of two series.
The Flash of
networks.
Two series. I like that. That that works really well.
Yeah, you know who it is.
Hi, this is John Wesley Shipp, and you're listening to Flash TV Talk.
Red and yellow, red and yellow, red and yellow, red and yellow.
All right, so we got some listener feedback. So, first one comes in from Greco-American Mythologist on Twitter. What did G-A-M-T? Wait, no, G-A-M. What did G-A-M say?
I guess the Tina's husband reference is to Jerry McGee from the Wally West comics, who became Speed Demon after performing similar experiments on himself. Interesting. So, this is like a triple layer reference, if this is true. No, never mind. I'm thinking of Carl. Never mind. Yeah, I... The whole Tina, Carl, Tina's
it's
husband.
The love dodecahedron, man. It's just throwing you off.
Yeah.
It's too many.
But no, that's
really
interesting.
Cut that down to like a love pyramid at the very least.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Love icosahedron. I don't know.
we need three-dimensional. We wanted three-dimensional love stories, and dang it, they got it. They got it for us.
But I do think that's neat that they're actually putting references to the comic property in the 90s show. I mean, because like, you know, Even they're like deep cut references on the CW show, even now, you know, with comic book movies and comic book TV shows, kind of like mainstreaming comics, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But to have like, yep. You know, a deep cut reference in the 90s when comics weren't, I mean, they got pretty big around the death of Superman. Like, I know there's a huge cultural kind of like comic books are cool because this death of Superman issue is going to be super expensive. Although this show came out before the death of Superman, didn't it?
Ah, man, see, you know what? This is great because we always get, we don't always get flack because typically we're better than this. But we have gotten flack on this podcast before for being uninformed about the subject matters that we're talking about. But this does put us at a pretty serene disadvantage because we're not actively in the 90s. This is 2020. God help us. Like, this is, you know, so we are having to kind of both cast our memory back to a time when we were just kids. We don't remember.
Yeah, that was many, many years ago.
Yeah, but that's a good question.
Oh, okay. It was originally published in 92. So this is a year after The Flash was over, but still, like, in the zeitgeist, right? Like, comic books were kind of bubbling up a little bit. Not as much as they are now, but a little...
Well, didn't the death of Superman take place because comics were taking a big hit? Like, that was, like, the big way to get to draw attention back to comics?
I mean, maybe, yes, probably. So I'm completely wrong, but still, even still.
I think that adds to the whole point of, like, this did not do what it was supposed to do. I've got so many questions. And maybe we'll know this, and maybe we can kind of, after the end of the season, kind of look back on, like, why didn't this take off? Because this is gold, Jerry. Like, this is like, really, really good stuff, especially for the era.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why it's so surprising to me to have a deep cut reference in this show that literally maybe like 10% of, well, I don't know. I guess probably it's hard to speak on like demographics and who is watching this show because we don't, I mean, I'm sure we could probably find the data from that somewhere. Like, you know, as far as like, you know, 18s to 35s, men, women, you know, children, like the whatever age demographics were watching it. But like, you get the figure, you get the feeling that like the show's on CBS. The audience, they didn't cater it directly towards comic fans. So it's kind of neat to see these references to the comics that really like your quote true fans would be the only ones to get. And so like, it shows to me that the creators, you know, while maybe they couldn't put the Incredible Hulk versus the Flash in the second episode, they at least understood the subject matter and the just vast, you know, comic universe that the Flash resides in. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're exactly right, man. And it's a question of whether or not it's true. I think it might be a stretch, but I love that that's where your head's at, JAM. So, yeah, that's great. Maybe we'll see. Maybe there'll be more of a name drop somewhere in there. I mean, like, look, if it's McGee, it's right there in the name. So
I know, right? It's gotta be. I'm for it. I think he's correct.
Man, we got an email in from Malcolm in London. What did Malcolm have to say?
Malcolm says, "Hey guys, just wanted to drop you a line to say how stoked I am that you're finally covering the 90s Flash show. As a 47-year-old Flash fan, this show was my jam back in the day. One of my earliest memories as a small boy back around 1979 was a plastic placemat with a picture of the Flash on one side and the comic strip of his origin on the other that I would eat my meals on every day. So you can probably imagine my excitement when I found out this show was coming. The only downside was being in the UK, we at first only got the pilot on VHS, and then the two Nightshade episodes and the Trickster episode as separate movies until about a year maybe when the series actually aired on satellite TV. Even though this Barry still isn't exactly like the Barry in the books, I thought it was a good blend of Barry and Wally with his excessive eating to fuel himself and his more lighter attitude while still keeping Barry CSI smarts, even before CSI was a thing. See if you can find the audio commentary where Bilson and DeMeo did that was on the Petfly website. It has some great behind-the-scenes nuggets. I think John Wesley Shipp was amazing as Barry back in the day, and he gave him just the right amount of physicality while also having the acting chops for the drama. And yes, I found myself wearing a light gray trench coat and slightly extending my chest and arms as I took off to catch buses wherever possible. Anyway, keep up the great work, guys. This is going to be fun." That's from Malcolm in London.
I love it, man. And yes, this time around, I meant to mention that, but I was watching. I was like, why did I think this was a lab coat in the first episode? Like, it's obviously a trench coat.
I mean,
but I think it's styles. You're not, my mind's not.
Yeah. There. Like, you know, if you weren't, you know, if you were completely, I guess removed from, you know, late 80s, early 90s culture, and you saw one of those, you would think, yeah, why is that guy wearing a lab coat? But yeah, that was like the style. And man, I tell you what, I watched The Lost Boys a couple weeks back, and now after watching this show, it's like I wish I had hair. I would be like the guy who's like trapped in the 80s for sure. I would have the big flowing over like trench coat thing and like crazy, you know, glam rock hair and eyeliner. Man,
that would have been you.
That would have been me. I mean, go back and watch, man, The Lost Boys and tell me that, like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's hair and the hair of the other vampires wasn't just amazing.
I'm going to do that. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it after this podcast, man. But I think for now we need to do a little business, because we made a promise at the top of the show, and we need to cash in on it here. Of course, we're talking about the fact that the series would not happen without the amazing support of our patrons. And so, as we mentioned last week, we are going to be giving away not one, but two Flash box sets to some amazing patrons, the people who are supporting the show. Now, we're going to give one away this episode. We're going to give one away later in the series. So if you want to be considered for the future, head over to patreon.com/TV Talk to sign up to support the show. By doing so, that'll enter in your name into the running. And Bell, are you ready for this?
I am.
All right. We're doing it at random. And the winner is... Carrie Stewart. No, I'm sorry. That was wrong. God. Wrong. I'm sorry. It was Moonlight. Moonlight. No, I'm just kidding. And the winner... It took you a second on that.
I was like, I guess that's their Patreon screen name.
I don't know. All right. La La Land.
Man, these are weird Patreon screen names.
Yeah, all right. Here we go. Here we go. And the winner is Carrie Stewart Wood, or Swartwood. Carrie Swartwood. Not only do you win a Flash box set, you also win me butchering your name. So congratulations, and thank you so much for your support.
Yes, congratulations. That's awesome. We'll be sending that out to you shortly. I guess I don't. What do they need to do to get in contact? We can.
I'm actually messaging you right now as we speak. So it's kind of like a. Wait, should I message now? Because then Carrie's going to be like, I already know I'm the winner.
No, don't do it yet. Wait till the episode airs.
Okay. All right, Carrie, message us through Patreon, and we'll get you set up. Yeah, absolutely. But thank you so much for your support. It's huge, and we really thank you so much. And of course, we will be drawing another random name from our patrons in the future. So head over to the future, no, the present, over at patreon.com/TVTalk. And I sign up there. Hey, one other thing I want to make mention of before we kind of officially sign out here. And that is, man, we are entering into the holiday season. In fact, next week will be Thanksgiving week, and we will be officially kicking off kind of that holiday season. And one of the things that we do here at Flash TV Talk is we have an annual Christmas special called Grandma Esther's Eggnog-Induced Christmas Call-In Extravaganza. And we have been kind of thinking about what we want to do in this crazy year that has been 2020. Nothing has happened the right way. Nothing. We don't have a show to speculate on in the same kind of way that we have in the past. It seems weird even trying to do kind of follies and that sort of thing that we've done in the past. And so I'm thinking, Bell, I'm thinking we just have a party.
I mean, I think that sounds
like
great.
A full-on party.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we invite everybody. Like everybody. And I don't mean everybody like, you know, you call up other podcasters. You know, who needs other podcasters? I'm talking about like people who are listeners. Like everybody shows up. We don't record a regular show. We might record it, but we might not put it out in like a podcast day. I'm thinking it's like just a full on hangout. Everybody brings some eggnog. Everybody shows up. We just hang out. We might play some games on a massive Zoom call. Probably broadcast it, but who knows? But that's kind of what I'm thinking for Grandma Esther's this year.
Yeah, I can pull up my green screen and like play episodes in the background. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Grandma Esther's quarantine Christmas call-in.
Zoom call.
Extrapolunza. Zoom
extravaganza.
Zoom extravaganza. Although on Flash TV Talk, I feel like if you put Zoom in it, it has a different connotation.
Well, hey, you know, we're talking about things being sus. I mean, we could do Among Us.
Man, what if Grandma Esther is actually Zoom?
Dun dun dun.
And with that one, you can follow us on Twitter at Flash TV Talk, or you can follow our personal accounts at The Real Bo York is me, and at Ring That Bell is Bell.
But if 280 characters isn't enough to express your love for our show, feel free to email us at flash@podastery.com. That's podastery.com.
Hey, if you're looking for some other great, fun, additional content, Flash TV Talk now has a YouTube channel with our Flashcraft series. That's our Minecraft kind of playthrough that we've been doing. If you enjoy some Minecraft, want to see some cool DC Comics builds, and enjoy the antics of one Matthew Bell and myself as well, head over there. Just look for Flash TV Talk on YouTube, and you will find us.
And as always, special thanks to Charlie Bach, who provides music for our show. You can check out the rest of his awesome stuff at soundcloud.com/Charlie Bach.
Also, great podcast at TVTalk.fm. What? There's no TV to talk about, you say? I say...
Nay to you.
Nay to you. Because classic Flash, we are on Earth 90, baby. And don't worry, we'll be back in a flash. Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to news, reviews, and more for the hit CW show, Flash. Bo.
And I'm Bell.
And I just realized I said the hit CW show again.
Yep.
That, okay, you know what? All right, Mike, add this one to the end of the episode again. Blast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.